The following show is dedicated to Mia Park and Barbara Yang. The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
All right. Welcome to Talk Saratoga. I'm your host, Rick Thompson. You're listening to WSPN 91.1 FM Skidmore Radio. And this morning we have a guest, a good friend of the show, Matt Veach. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning.
You're here now. You'll be here now as Saratoga Springs City Historian.
Yes.
And in your new role, you decided not to run for re-election last fall, and after 18 years, which what?
Don't 19, cut me short.
1998
there,
was it?
2007. 2008 was when I started.
2008.
2025.
Yeah. Okay, and you know, a lot of people were disappointed, but you know, it gets to be on you after a while, and you did a great job all the years you were in there. So
thank you.
How do you like your new role as a city historian?
Yeah, so I love it. I mean, it's an amazing job. You know, I got appointed to this role in October of 2025, okay, after the longtime city historian Marion Fitzgerald decided to retire. And, you know, before we really even talk about me, you know, and what I do, Marion was amazing. She just did a great job as a city historian. She was there for over 20 years and, you know, really was a great steward of the city's archive. You know, she did a lot of talks, presentations. She's actually doing one, I think, the next week up in the town of Greenfield. So she's still kind of staying in that,
sure,
in that role. But, you know, she really was somebody who I can tell, you know, just from being in the role for a few months, that, you know, people within the city relied on, mm-hmm, people who were her, you know, regular clients relied on, and was just a wealth of knowledge for Saratoga Springs. So, you know, her role will be missed as well.
That's amazing.
And I'm looking forward to kind of taking it up where she left off.
Well, you're a big historic buff of Saratoga anyway. I mean, we used to do a couple shows on, you know, Saratoga history.
Yeah.
When you were on before, and your family goes back so far. But are you in City Hall? I mean, do you have an office there?
So, great question. So, the city historian's office is located at 297 Broadway, which is in the Saratoga Visitor Center.
Okay.
So, the visitor center, like if you walk in the front door of the visitor center, you'll see like the welcome desk and all the tourist related materials that are there in there, and the visitor center runs that area of the building essentially. Their offices are on the left hand side. So if you go to the right hand side, it'll be like a little tiny hallway,
yeah,
and then a door where my office is.
Okay.
And it's basically a two-tiered office. Has like an upstairs area where it's kind of like the office.
Okay.
And then the downstairs area is where the archive is.
Oh, all right.
So the archive is located, the main part of the archive is located in a old concrete vault that may have been constructed when the building was constructed, you know, as the old trolley station back in the old days.
All right.
And was probably where they kept all their, you know, records for the trolley station, bills, maybe,
sure,
maybe money.
Now,
right?
This is across from Congress Park, correct?
Correct.
That,
yes.
The old drink hall, was it?
Yes.
It used to,
yes,
be known as.
Yes,
too?
Yes,
yeah,
yes. The old drink hall, I guess,
okay,
you can call it. Yeah. And so it has like a real combination. That really only I know. Marianne might know it still. You know, nobody, they have a little thing in City Hall that's like an envelope where the combination is. So in case something happens,
right,
somebody can get
can
in
get
because
in.
There's nobody really knows it. So that's one of the kind of cool things that, you know, I have as city historian. There's,
so
yeah, he
like
knows
Karen,
the combination where all the records are.
It's like carrying around the nuclear briefcase.
Yeah, right, right,
you know?
Exactly.
<You know?
laughs> So that's the office, but the vault itself is the oldest records of Saratoga Springs, and a map collection that is really unbelievable. So, you know, the vault has, you know, minutes from the earliest days of our time as a town. And we'll get into town and village and that kind of stuff a little bit later. But, you know, 1819 is when we were formed as a town. And so the earliest record I have, like, in a written form is from 1820.
Wow.
Like, from the first town meeting, you know, that we had in Saratoga and electing a town supervisor and a board of trustees and all of that for the town.
Was there a beach in any of those offices?
We actually didn't arrive until about 100 years after that.
All right.
It's really cool to, like, know that you have that document, like, in
that
your
far back.
You know, in your vault, the originating kind of documents of the town,
yeah.
Right? And you know, so it's town minutes as they established assessments for properties, you know, assessment records that go way back into those old early days. You know, tax records when they built water systems, we have, you know, records that deal with that. You know, police blotters and court docket justice books, those are in there. A lot of police blotters from the early days all the way up until, you know, maybe the 1970s, and tax and assessment records. So that's like the core of the documents. There's other stuff like Board of Education records and other things like that. But those are like the city and village documents that we have. They go up to about 1971 or two. Some of the paper minutes of city council meetings go into the 2000s, but it's mayor's old papers, you know, records of different programs that we did. You know, my former history talks are usually about urban renewal and city planning.
Right.
They have an extensive record of urban renewal and what happened.
Was that used for reference when the city was having that big problem with the state over the NYRA rights, the property rights? Did they go back in the historical records? I know Ramesha Foy was city finance commissioner then, and they couldn't find paperwork or something, and I just wondered if that was in the historical.
I think that there's maybe some of that there. They were looking for, I think, deeds to the properties, if I remember, at the time.
Yeah, I think
like
they
how
were.
Who had the deed.
Correct.
And did the Saratoga Association back in the 90s. This is more of a topic if you had my dad in. He would know a little bit more about.
Right.
But, you know.
Come in together sometime.
Yeah, the Saratoga Association. Well, he's a historian of the Racing Museum. So,
okay.
You know, so he has his own place where he's the historian.
Well, that's good.
But I think they were looking to see, like, if the Saratoga Association ever owned the property. And if NYRA ever actually owned the property, right? And my office probably did some work there. I would assume they had leaned on Marianne for some information. We have a lot of old maps that show the kind of build out of the racetrack in my map collection, which was another thing I was going to say. I have an amazing map collection.
Wow.
Of subdivisions and property, you know, how we kind of built our city. You can see in maps like where it starts this
see
way.
Where from map.
Yeah,
to map.
The big Henry Walton, you know, subdivisions of, you know, hundreds, and, you know, he owned a huge acres and acres and acres of land in the early days, you know, hundreds and hundreds of lots that he subdivided in the city that you can even today find. You know, the property, right?
Oh, wow.
You can see, well, this was lot 305, right? And, oh, there it is. And there's the house. And so somebody bought it and, you know, built something there. And then those assessment and tax records are how you figure out, like, when the house maybe got built.
Okay.
Because the assessed land is one thing, but an assessed land with a house
is another.
Gives you a clue that maybe that's when the house was built, right?
Sure.
And so to kind of turn it around a little bit, the clientele that I get is generally that people who are looking for either house histories or property records to try to learn about like when a house was constructed or when the property maybe changed hands, because
mm-hmm.
you could see the names change in the books. So I get a lot of that. The questions I get are of that kind of nature, right? I find it fascinating.
to
see certain lots and maybe even buildings that you recognize and who owned it or how it transferred. And I've run into my first one that seems a little shaky. Like, there's no real deed record, and this guy happened to sell it to this other person, and we don't really can't track back like the real clean property transfers back in the days. And you know, so you know, you're gonna have my brother on, I think, in April. You know, he's the one that talks a little bit more of the nefarious things that happened, but
right.
even in the, you know, stale, maybe boring records of the city, you find these little clues like,
little shady things.
Everybody kind of gave this property to this guy, and we don't really know. Like, it was owned by five people, and this one guy just handed it over to this other person, and didn't file anything at the county clerk's office. So, you know, we don't really know what happened.
talking about your brother, he wrote two great books.
Yes.
Did he find information out from the city historian?
Yes, yes. He reached out to me recently because he's researching a parcel that he. And I'm not going to get too much into detail, but a guy owned a house down in like the downtown area in the 1800s. And he thinks that there may have been using his garage as a ramshackle jail. The city maybe leaned on him and said, hey, you got a garage. Can you put some, you know, criminals in the back, right? And he's trying to figure out whether the garage existed in the old days.
Okay.
And how to try to find that out. So. I'm using my newly kind of found skills in the assessment books and tax records to try to see, like, well, was he paying taxes on it? Or was it showing two structures or just one? You know, so we can kind of maybe figure that out in a different way than just looking at, like, news reports, right, of the day. So the funny part of it is that I don't know. I'm still struggling to figure out the actual, you know, clue of whether this guy was doing what my brother thinks he was doing at the time. Yeah. And then the other funny part is, well, did he get a tax break because he was hosting the jail at his property, right?
It's got to be fascinating.
Yeah.
I know in the city I grew up in Gloversville back, you know, I mean, Gloversville used to be a really big city.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of action. I remember having a radio show in Malta when Lynn and I did it.
Yep.
And this lady used to call from Mechanicville, and she had three sisters. And she remembers back in the day, they used to get in the car from Mechanicville and drive to Gloversville because they had Sherman's, the lake, an amusement park.
Oh, yeah, right.
And they had dances. Mm-hmm. And she said that was the go-to place. And, I mean, the history back then is amazing. And I don't know if they even have an active historian anymore. But
well, they should, which is an interesting point that you bring up. Because... I was going to bring this up a little bit earlier, is that the city historians and village and town historians are all in state law that they're required for the municipality to have one.
Okay.
So, because some people ask me that all the time, like, hey, city historian, like, what is that and why is it even a thing, right? Interestingly, in the 1920s, I think it was, maybe earlier than that, the state arts and cultural law actually is the ones that establish the historians for each municipality. And so in the law, it says that there shall be a historian for your municipality. So every city, town, village has a historian or should have an historian.
Okay.
And in Saratoga County, we have every town except for maybe one of the villages, I'm not sure which one, has a active historian town, right? And so the historian is appointed by the mayor for cities. So Mayor Safford appointed me to the position. There is no consent of the council or anything like that. It's a straight appointment. Chief executive appointment of this position. So I appreciate Mayor Safford thinking of me for that. And, you know, Mary Ann and I had some conversations last year about it. You know, she was thinking about, you know, leaving and I kind of said, hey, you know, maybe I'd be interested in it. And, you know, so we kind of had that discussion, and she was great training me and getting me up to speed of what was going on.
Yeah.
So
now I would assume, of course, you should never assume, but I would assume once you have that post, you stay in no matter who the mayor is.
Yeah.
I would think, because you're learning everything. And once you know how to operate that, it's probably not an easy task.
Yeah. I hope to be there for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one thing. I mean, I, and again, I love the job. So there's really, you know, as far as jobs I've had in my life and continue to have.
Yeah.
You know, this one is the tops. I mean, I just love it.
Yeah, and it's got to be somebody dedicated.
Yes.
And that knows about history of Saratoga.
Yes. And, you know, I just put in my membership for the Association of Public Historians in New York State. So I'm joining that group of statewide historians, and they have a conference once a year. And I can't wait to get down there to, like, you know, meet some other people and kind of collaborate with them. Because it's really a it's really an interesting kind of job.
Yeah.
You know, nothing that I do is time sensitive per se, which is good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, people call and they ask for some information, and you know, I can take as much time as I want to learn it. But you know, kind of just go back a touch. You know, the archive itself, I have a lot to learn, right? I mean, I've only been in it for maybe 6 months, and you know, walking into there, I still don't know what I don't know in the collection, right? There are things in there that I'm going to find that are going to just be amazing, and I don't quite yet have a handle on where and how everything fits together.
Sure.
Right? I'm getting there. and there are filing cabinets upon filing cabinets of collected materials from prior historians, right, of the city that they found important to save. And so there's a lot of that too, right? Where it's like, you know, documents on old hotels, festivals and organizations in the city, people. There's a whole filing cabinet of just people. It's the people from Saratoga who were important and documentation on
them. Probably amazing, the information that they used to keep.
Yeah.
And that was kept, you know. But that's what I meant. I don't think you can keep changing out historians. Once you know to where to look for things, it's hard for somebody to come in maybe every 2 years or every 4 years whatever. I think, and you know, I mean, you have to be interested in history and you have to know, go back. So
yes.
It's got to be fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, you hear the names of people, right? And you go, oh, yeah, I know about that, you know, and but you don't really because you only heard about it.
Right.
Then you finally see the documentation and you get a better understanding of what it actually was or who that person actually was and what they did. You know, that's the part that I'm really still trying to figure out. Like, those names come up and I just go, wait, I gotta take a little time here to learn a little bit about them. You know, I'm getting ready to do my first presentation, which is part of this job too, public outreach, obviously. For the Preservation Foundation for their homes tour, which is coming up in May. And I decided to do Lucy Scribner.
Okay.
And as we are on Skidmore College's campus, that's a very important person to do.
Yeah.
But it's really more about women's education in Saratoga Springs, because even before Skidmore was a college, we had the Temple Grove Seminary. Which was on a corner of Circular and Spring Street, Skidmore Apartments.
Today.
Okay. That was actually a women's school before we had Skidmore College.
Oh, all right.
And so it's interesting to know that Saratoga Springs was kind of almost like a pioneering community when it came to women's
education.
Right. Yeah. And so even before Skidmore was a thing in the early 1900s, we were already doing that in the 1800s here.
Right.
Among the schools of the area. So, you know, think Emma Willard School, you know, some of those other schools like that are around. Temple Grove was one of among a few that were doing that in the early days. And so so I'm really, really fascinated with, like, why here?
Yeah.
And who was involved in it? And the cities in the city, or at the time villages,
right,
level of support of that kind of thing within our community,
yeah,
right?
And you wonder what brought them here,
right,
to start that. I mean,
right,
I know, you know, I know it used to be and it may still be, but I remember my father-in-law telling me when he was young, he worked the baths in the state park. And, of course, the Jewish people used to come up all the time for the baths.
Yep.
And it was a big population, along with the racetrack for the 4 weeks or however long back then. And so you wonder if, because of the influx of that, then they decided to put something up here. I don't know. I mean, it would be interesting to know the story.
Yeah, well, and interestingly, that area... the other side of Circular Street. So when you go down the hill toward downtown, anywhere from about that area, Spring Street to, say, Lake Avenue, right? That whole kind of area going down, you know, we call it the gut,
the gut,
we go
or
down
the valley. My father-in-law
down into the valley, right? that kind of area was, there was a lot of Jewish rooming houses and hotels there. And even people who lived in the city that year round that were Jewish in that area. So, you know, I think we, one of the important things I think about being a historian is to try to either retell or re-engage with the community as to why those folks were here, what they were doing. You know, in today's world, we kind of get a little, you know, we talk a little bit about, you know, it's a little edgier sometimes when we talk about history, right? You know, they talk about racism and you talk about all those other kind of more political topics, right? And those are important to talk about. But, you know, just knowing about what was there, the what is sometimes we lose that in the, in that kind of, you know,
in the description,
in the viewpoint, right? Yeah. So you, it's better, you got to start with the what. And maybe a little of the why.
Right.
And then you can get into, like, you know, how did the community treat those folks when they were here,
right?
But we need to know what and why they were even here in the first place.
Exactly.
Right? And there's reasons for that. So,
and obviously, every group that came in, the Irish, the Italians, the Jewish people, you know, the African Americans, they added to the culture
of
Saratoga.
Yes.
And so, I mean, it'd be neat to try and tie all that in. Of course, that's a lot of work because you
got to
go way back, but it's kind of neat to see how all that ties in.
But interesting part of that is you can tie that all to those records, right?
Right.
So assessment and tax records give you some of an insight to that. So it sounds kind of boring when you say assessment records. It's a huge book. It weighs 50 pounds. You got to pull it out of the shelf and open it up, right? But when you do that, you wind up learning about where and where people were. I mean, you said Italians and Irish, right? They're generally west side of Saratoga.
Right.
But eventually they kind of merge into the whole city, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And Jewish folks were on the other side of Broadway near Circular Street.
Right.
And that whole neighborhood was kind of a little bit of an enclave, right? So it's stuff that we don't really see as much today in today's world.
No.
You know, we're you know, not to get into it too much, but we're, you know, very white city.
And
property values have gone up so much that it has kind of
limited,
smoothed out where different, like, races might want to live within the community.
Groups.
It's hard.
Well, you
got
to remember too that when immigration was big back in the turn of the century, or even in the early 1900s. Large groups of Italians, Irish came over, and they settled in a neighborhood of themselves,
right,
and kept the communities. And then as time went on, they would move out, because I think the West Side started out being Italian, then
Irish.
It was more Irish, and then it went, moved to Italian section as the Irish moved, branched out into different areas. So I think that is fascinating to know.
The
whole thing. And I honestly, I can see a book coming.
Maybe. Maybe.
I can see a book coming.
Maybe. And look, and then the interesting part, or maybe not interesting part, or maybe shameful part, if you want to look at it that way, is, you know, urban renewal program, right?
Right.
Has such an overwhelming impact on our city. For good and bad. I say that, and some people don't like that I say the good part, but, you know, there are some things that were good. A lot of it was really challenging and not so good, but, you know, that West Side neighborhood, you know, was, you know, demolished basically, at least from, you know, the Broadway to, you know, almost, you know, that whole first block of it for sure. And all the way up through toward Adirondack Trust on Church Street, just kind of, and then the Spring Valley. So,
sure.
So the valley is, of course, we just talked about Jewish folks, right?
Right.
And so that area was kind of, part of it at least, was demolished, right?
Yeah.
So where were the targets? And we have to think about that. And we have to acknowledge that was who was displaced out of our
city. That happened in every city.
Yeah.
I remember back in the late 60s and 70s, my father was on the council in Gloversville. And that's when urban renewal was big.
Happening in a lot of places.
And they had to take parts of the city down. And a lot of it was offshoots of the main street.
Yes.
A lot
Saratoga.
Of old
Perfect.
Stores. I mean, I remember as a kid, Bleecker Street had like a New York Lunch, which had amazing hot dogs. They had a meat market. And they had wooden sidewalks.
Yep.
that whole street was removed, taken down, and the parking lots on each side now. And I'm sure people were bellyaching back then about having to do things. But you know what? Cities had to go through that to modernize. It was a tough thing to do, but it had to be done.
Saratoga is no different. We are still struggling with that, you know, and as a community today, Gloversville maybe too. There was a talk that was done a few weeks ago, I think over at the Frederick Island Lodge, and they've been doing a project on that, you know, erasing faces, erasing spaces. And, I think it's a good way to, you know, retell the story. There's different viewpoints, and I think they all need to be heard, right? I mean, that's the part that needs to be brought out. And, you know, as the city historian, and I need to remember this, my family was involved in urban renewal in Saratoga Springs. I have to make sure I'm objective and available to anybody, right? So whatever you're writing your project on, whatever your point of view is going to be at the end, my job is to make sure you have access to all the documents that you need, all the research material that you want, and you can draw your own conclusions from that, and it may not be my opinion.
Right, you can't put your opinion on it. You have to provide information.
I have to be open and accessible to everyone, and I will do that. I will make sure that happens.
And you know urban renewal front and backwards. It hurt a lot of people, but it also helped a lot of people.
Yeah, and infrastructure-wise, I always say this, it was pretty successful.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we had a problem down in the valley where the flooding happened, and every big rainstorm. I have videos that my grandfather took back in the 40s, before even urban renewal was even a thing, of, waist-high water down on High Rock. I mean, people don't even remember that, right?
No, they don't.
Because the village brook would flood. The sewers weren't good enough to handle it, and the water just came up and basically flooded that whole area every time we had a big rainstorm.
I remember when I was going out with my wife in the early 80s in a heavy rainstorm, you didn't want to drive down Spring Street even then in the 80s until they got it straightened out.
But, right.
It was a thing that you didn't think of when you were building that back then.
Right.
But, it's...
And the structures that were down on High Rock Ave... Right. I mean, they would think about their basements flooding or the bottom floor of every single time it rained, the lower floor of your house had water in it. Right. And what does that do to a structure over time? Right. The wooden structures can't get wet. The more wet they get, the worse that wood becomes and they start to fall apart. Right. And
So,
it created kind of a problem for structures down in that area. But, they were also some of the most affordable areas of our city. That, those certain types of people were in those areas, so that becomes your issue with urban renewal, right?
Yeah.
When you take away the personal aspect of it, you see, like, it sounds great. but then when you get into the details, you go, who did they displace, right?
Right, so, right, exactly.
But, I don't really want to talk too much about that anymore.
It's part of history,
yeah.
Part of Saratoga history. You got records on it, and that's interesting. Now, obviously, back in the 1700s or late 1700s, there's probably no records about. Is there records about when the Indians were here in the Springs and what they did? I know.
So, yeah.
Sir William Johnson from my area was a big deal in bringing the Indians up from Canchaharie, Fultonville, Gloversville, Johnstown area to fight in the French and Indian Wars.
Yep.
Got injured. Thought he was going to die. The Indians brought him down here for the baths, for the water, and got healed. I mean, they've written books about that, but is there historical facts about that in writing, or not?
Yeah.
They didn't keep anything?
Well, there is. Our archive doesn't really have a lot of, I'll call it first-person accounts of Sir William Johnson. Saratoga, and this is where that Mary Annie has actually told me this before I got in, and she's right. Saratoga Springs as a town was not established until 1819.
Okay.
So really, any records that are from prior to that are really in the town of Saratoga. The town of Saratoga was our parent town, which I was actually going to get into this in my longer story, but we'll talk about it now.
Yeah, but you don't have to.
We were actually split off from the town of Saratoga in 1819, right? So earlier records before 1819 really are at the town of Saratoga. And that's their town historian is amazing and does a great job. He's very, very involved in the Saratoga 250 celebrations because the war happened, the battles of Saratoga happened in the town of Saratoga and the town of Stillwater, right? So they're very, very, focused on the 250th celebration. We're going to play a part two here in Saratoga Springs, but it's a little lesser of a part because the battles happened to our east, not necessarily here. The spring is important, though, in that era because of the Sir William Johnson visit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, we had thought it was 1767 for many, many years. Come to find out, it was actually around 1771. And the record, the actual first-person record, as we're asking about, is we found his papers. The New York State Archive has the Sir William Johnson. I think it's New York State Archive. Sorry if I got that wrong, anybody who's listening. has Sir William Johnson's letters, right? Or maybe he has his own historic site that has the letters. That's possible, too.
Yeah.
So they went through his papers and found his writing account of visiting Saratoga. The date on the letter is, I think, 1771. It doesn't say in the letter that it was 1771. They're assuming, though, that because it's commingled with him saying he visited, that they placed it at 1771. So the city actually had a big celebration in 1967, celebrating the 200th of Sir William Johnson's visit, but they were off by about 4 years. But he was the, I believe, the chief of the Indian Affairs, right? Administrator from the British government, right?
Yeah.
And so he definitely worked with the native peoples, and they were the ones that brought him here to Saratoga. But that's our origin story, right?
Yeah.
For thousands of years, Native Americans actually were the first people here.
Sure.
They knew about the spring before any of us did.
Yeah. Well, he credits in his book the water saving his life, which it did.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's amazing the part that Saratoga played in that.
Yes.
Of course, Saratoga was the path up to Canada anyway.
As well as to the
Lake
east.
Lake George.
Yep.
Yeah, and to the east.
Yep.
So it's fascinating.
Because the Hudson River was really the transportation center, right, of the area.
And the big area is centered around water. So,
So, it's interesting. It's an interesting story. and I don't know where we're at, but we can get into the actual origin
story. We got
a little bit of
time. Yeah, don't worry about it.
Starting with Sir William Johnson, or starting with the native peoples, really, after Sir William Johnson's visit is when we kind of started getting into people knowing about Saratoga. But really, maybe General Philip Schuyler might have even been more important in that than Sir William Johnson, because he was the one that was the Revolutionary War general who started to really develop kind of this area, right? Built a road from his home in Schuylerville out to Saratoga because of the waters that were here, right? He needed a way there. We needed an efficient way to get from the Hudson River inland, right?
Right.
And so during some of those campaigns after the Revolutionary War, George Washington and others came to this area and, surveyed the springs. He wanted to... Philip Schuyler wanted to show those generals, what we had in this area, learning about the area. They didn't know anything really about it, right? Washington's campaigns were not in this area.
Oh, no.
They were down south.
Down so, the city or
yep,
New Jersey.
New Jersey.
Or whatever.
So, so they came and, surveyed the area, and then eventually somebody decided or felt that there might be a ability to kind of build a permanent settlement here, right? And on the bluff overlooking High Rock Park today, somebody built a crude log cabin, wanted to set up a tavern, for potential visitors. And, the city or this community was kind of born, right? One crude log house, essentially.
Crude log house, which was a beverage place.
Right. There was a couple of failed attempts, right? The cabin was abandoned at one point, and again, I'm still getting into the details of that history,
sure.
So I can't really be too specific, but eventually Alexander Bryan, who was a Revolutionary War scout, built the first permanent kind of settlement at that location. Another tavern, log cabin kind of structure,
right.
Which eventually became where the Old Bryan Inn sits today.
It?
So, interestingly enough, the Old Bryan Inn is not the oldest structure in Saratoga Springs.
Really?
At least that we can track.
Okay.
It's actually about 10 years younger than the oldest structure in Saratoga Springs. The oldest structure that has a plaque on it from the Preservation Foundation is actually on South Franklin Street,
Really?
Over near Washington Street. It's a little yellow house, and it's about 1815 or
oh, wow.
so. So yeah. it was actually predating the Old Bryan Inn as a structure. So the reason for that, though, is because when Gideon Putnam got here,
mm-hmm.
considered the city's founder,
sure.
The Congress Spring was founded. He felt that there was actually going to be more interest in the Congress Spring as a attraction for our city, and started actually laying out the street network down in that area of the village, if you want to call
right.
it, at the time. So that area was actually growing as well. So you had what was called the Upper Village, which was by High Rock,
right.
and then the Lower Village, which was down by Congress Park,
right.
Growing at the same time, right?
Okay.
People were building houses, structures were going up. Putnam built an actual hotel right there, and people thought he was nuts, in 1803, like, who's going to come to this place, right? Woods and swamps, right? but found that that area of the village actually grew faster than the upper village.
The upper village. Wow,
by
that's
higher,
amazing.
Right?
That's amazing.
So eventually what happens is each of those two areas, they kind of start growing in the early 1800s, and they get close enough. And by the way, 1819, we have enough people to get the state to separate us as a town from the town of Saratoga, right? So we become the town of Saratoga Springs,
okay.
right, in 1819. But really, a mere 6 years later, the Lower Village and the Upper Village kind of come together,
okay.
With Broadway as the central spine, right, between the two. And by 1826, we have enough people to start petitioning the state to become a village, right? And so this is really what I celebrate today as we approach the actual date, is 1826 is when we actually formed the Village of Saratoga Springs, which was a very interesting parallelogram drawn on a map that was within the town of Saratoga Springs, became the Village of Saratoga Springs. It's just like almost a square.
Okay.
When you look at it on maps. But April 17th, 1826 was the date that the state passed their legislation to create the Village of Saratoga Springs. So 200 years, right? It's the 200th anniversary of the village. And I find that cool. I celebrate that, that we were a village within a town for many, many years, right? And the village then, of course, has its own set. So that's where my collection gets interesting, right? Town of Saratoga Springs has a bunch of minutes and notes and assessment records and tax books, right? But then the Village of Saratoga Springs has its own set of
records.
Village minutes, records, highway. So you start to get like the water and the highway and the police and all that starts to kind of form up as we form a village, right? Because we start to have some of those municipal services, right?
Sure.
That villages provide as opposed to a town, right? So you start to see like the highway taxes come in, and you start to see the sewer taxes and the water tax, and we start building all these different types of infrastructure in the
right.
village, right? That the town doesn't have. The town is mainly rural still, but there's co-mingling minutes, and you can see all that kind of happen within the records, right? And then by 1914, 1915, we get enough folks that we kind of talk about forming ourselves into a city. Which creates a different set of municipal services that the townspeople benefit from, right? The village has already got a lot of that, but we're now going to expand that out into the town area. So in 1915, we become a city. Then all the records kind of come together, and we just have one set of records, which is great for guys like me trying to look at the historical record. Everything consolidates into like one tax book at that point, instead of having two sets of everything.
Ones, yeah.
So that helps. And then, we move forward. We have our modern police force. Sewer systems start to be built out into the outer areas of our community. You know, services get improved for the townspeople, right, that live out in the outskirts. And then you can see the development happen, right? I mean, 20 years later, you know, 1950s or so, you start to see the outer part of downtown expand, right? And then in the 60s, it gets even more. You know, a big, huge development happens starting out in Geyser Crest and out of West Avenue area,
yeah.
Some of those developments. And then in the 1970s and 80s, it explodes again. With a massive developments that happen out Washington Street, right?
Yep.
And even as you go out towards Saratoga Lake, they start to grow.
Yep.
And then 90s and 2000s, and you kind of know the story from there. We exploded as a city in terms of its size.
Yeah. I mean, even Grand Avenue, where I live off of,
right.
I mean, that went huge. It was off farmland when we moved up here,
yep.
basically, and then it just kind of expanded out.
Exactly. Well, you know, Grandy Industrial Park. I mean, think of that, right? I mean, that's all in the old town of Saratoga Springs, right?
Okay.
That whole area. In Geyser Crest, where I'm from,
right.
You know, those developments were just massive developments in the 60s that and 70s that just really pushed our city's population upward.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that Geyser Crest is like a little city in itself.
Yeah, anyway.
I mean, or so.
What do they say? It's about almost a quarter of our population lives in the Geyser Crest area, right, of our city.
Yeah.
So it's not insignificant.
Oh, no, not at all. But I'll give you a little historical fact.
Sure.
My wife's great-grandfather was Saratoga Springs' first fire chief.
Oh, okay.
And he was fire chief, I think, for 50 years as Chadwick.
I might have an oral history from him, but I'll have to check.
I know my father-in-law gave my wife a lot of stuff to bring down to the fire department and when she was a teenager.
Yes.
And she had her picture taken with the police or with the firemen and the fire chief there. But if you go into the local on Grand Ave.
Okay.
In all the way in the back, sit at that table. There's that big picture of him.
Yeah, I know the one.
Yeah, and that was him. And I think he got killed on the job when an old fire engine, horse drawn, they had their own car for the fire chief. They had a driver and everything.
Right.
Pulled up to a fire and got in between the two, and something rolled back. And
do you know the year?
No. I don't know. My father-in-law would have known. I don't know if my wife knows.
If you know, if you can find the year,
yeah,
send that to me. Because I have the fire blotters, right? The fire response books from probably back to that era.
Okay,
right, and it's like, you know, it's like the record of every call that came in and every event that occurred, every incident, right?
Sure.
And if that is in there, I can find the actual fire record that you know where they responded.
Now, I know my father-in-law was born in the 20s, in 1923, I think. And they were at the Firehouse restaurant there, where the restaurant was. And he remembers him letting them go down the fire pole. So he had to be fire chief in the early, late 1800s or whatever.
Because
I think it was, I heard the number 50 years. But that pretty interesting. And he looks like an old-time fireman, too, with a handlebar mustache.
Well, you know, like I say, those are the kinds of things that you can learn interesting kind of topics, facts about through my collection, right?
Sure.
Because you will, while a lot of the records are kind of, I'll call them sanitized records because they're city records, right? It won't say, like, all the real action that occurred.
Sure.
But it'll record the call, right?
Okay.
And you'll see when the call came in and you'll see what happened and if there was a fatality or an injury, right, it'll report that an injury occurred, right?
Okay.
And it'll say, you know, maybe who. And you know, so I've done a little bit of that research even right at the beginning. The fire department had asked me on a couple occasions for some things. But you know, one thing I'll say as we kind of get moving here is that, you know, my collection is anything really Saratoga Springs related. So if there's anybody who has old records or old documents that they think are relevant to the city of Saratoga Springs' history or town or village, if they're old enough, you know, I'm interested in looking at them.
Okay.
I'm also interested in collecting them. If you feel like you want to do that, we have a little bit of a process at the city to, you know, bring in records to the collection.
Sure.
You know, I do see in my collection that there are are donated collections of other folks. Most of my map collection is a donated collection from an individual who had them. Again, the oldest record I have is in the map collection, and it's the Kateros patent from, I think, 1771, with all the names of the landowners who got the allotments of the Kateros patent, right? And there was also the Saratoga patent, which was more near Saratoga Lake. But that's the oldest document I have. It's from 1771. I can pull it out of the map case and look directly at it. And I find that very cool.
And why not donate it? I mean, you know, at least you're preserving it for history.
Yes.
And it's going to go on for as long as Saratoga is a city.
Maps, books, you know, not fictional books, but, you know, anything that, like, you think might have been a city record that wound up somewhere. That's the kind of stuff I'm interested in doing. So, you know, like, I have old Grand Union Hotel registers or U.S. hotel registers. I have one U.S. hotel register from 1920.
Okay.
Just tell you a little quick fact on that.
Yeah.
So Joseph Widener, who was one of the most famous racing stables of that time, came to Saratoga in 1920, because that's the only year that I have, for 4 weeks. He came with 16 people in his group.
Yeah.
Maybe lists all their names, but doesn't say what they did. And he rented a series of rooms at the U.S. Hotel. His room rate in 1920 was $186 per night.
You're kidding me.
Right. So, well, $186 in 1920 was like $1,000.
Oh, my God, if not more.
So he paid a full bill for a week of around $1,800, which included his, you know, housing his carriage, keeping his, you know, chauffeur, you know, his car, whatever, you know, garaged. He had a chauffeur, you know, and a driver.
And housekeeper.
Right, all those folks came with him, right? Yeah. And so he paid, I think it was the $1,800 for 1 week. In 1920, and then I did the calculation. You know, it came to something like, you know, a $20,000 hotel bill, and he paid it for 4 weeks, right? Because his group came for four weeks, right, for the whole racing meet. And so, so it was interesting to think of, like, you know, the guy paid, like, in today's world, like $100,000 hotel bill to the U.S. hotel for his time, and he did it every year,
and it was
right.
Well, there was of course, this was before Saratoga. This was in the 1800s during the Civil War. Lincoln's, there was a fellow that financed the part of the Civil War for Lincoln.
Yes.
He gave him a lot of money. He was from New York. But he used to come to Saratoga every summer with I don't know how many people and stayed at one of the hotels.
Yep.
And I mean, he brought his cook, his servants,
yep,
whatever. And it's just interesting,
yes,
how those people used to come to Saratoga and bring everybody with them.
I see a lot of that where it's, you know, the driver and the servants come,
yeah,
right? And so different, again, a different kind of society, really, I guess you could say. You know, very few people, I think, in today's world now have, like, that kind of a setup, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Where you have, you know, hired hands.
Or would come that way.
Right, or show up that way. But you know, it's interesting, and those are, like, the kinds of things that I haven't even scratched the surface on.
Well,
right? There's so
years,
much.
Probably.
Yeah, there's so much there to look at. But, you know, just on a couple of other things, right? You know, I do from time to time get freedom of information requests.
Okay.
I know I didn't realize that until I got there that Marianne does those, like, when there's a property in question and somebody wants city documents related to a location, they actually turn to the city historian and say, you know, do the research on this property. What do we have in our collection on this property, right? Who lived where and property transactions. So that's kind of interesting.
Sure.
You take part in some of that actual real city municipal work, which I think is interesting. And then again, like I say, anything that anybody feels like they have is a relevant historical document to Saratoga Springs. Again, if you brought it to me, I may not think that it should be in the collection, so don't be offended if I say, no, I don't think I should take this. But at the end of the day, you know, I am getting some people who have some things that these are documents that we should have. Maps.
Oh, and I'm sure we'll, you know,
various photographs and things like that, you know, old photos of the city.
Yeah.
You know, I have a great photograph collection as well that a lot of it's municipal stuff, and a lot of it is urban renewal photos. But, you know, there's a lot, I have a photo collection, and I'm willing to expand that photo collection, right? And again, everything gets credited if there's a donor. So, you know, we definitely don't just pull it in the collection and then, you know, forget the gift, right? Because it's a gift to the city.
We have about 4 minutes left. What about the 200th anniversary celebration? Let's talk about that a little before.
Well, there's no formal celebration.
There isn't.
No, I'm working with Mayor Safford to try to get maybe a proclamation done.
Okay.
But I'll keep you posted on that as
yeah,
we go
do
forward.
That.
But really, more importantly, how do you get a hold of me, right?
Right.
My Saratoga County email no longer exists.
It doesn't. Oh, no, yeah. Well,
I'm not a supervisor.
You're not a supervisor anymore. You think the city historian would.
Right.
Gosh, you're going to have to create one.
So, no, I'm a city employee, so I have a city email, right?
Okay.
So it's just Matthew, M-A-T-T-H-E-W, .V-E-I-T-C-H.
Yeah.
@ Saratoga-Springs.
Okay.
.org. So it's just the standard city.
Yep, standard you know, domain. City. Yeah.
And you know, because disclosure, I do have a full time job still. You know, I work for a technology company out of New Jersey, and so mostly during the week I'm not in my office.
Okay.
Because I'm working at my other job, so I mainly have open hours on evenings. It is usually 2 to 3 days a week, depending on the week, and every other Saturday from 9 to 12, I'm usually at the the visitor center.
Okay,
they're usually not open when I'm open.
Right.
So
right.
If you do want to get a hold of me, my phone number is 518-584-1787.
And I can make an appointment?
And you can make an appointment, and it is a cell phone. So my city line is just a cell phone. So
and
you can text that number.
Okay.
So if you send me a text,
just
say who you are, right?
Sure.
And you're looking for, you know, want to visit the history museum or a history office.
Yeah.
I can just say when I'm going to be there, because I'm not always there every day, even in the evenings.
So
it's a part-time gig.
I think your wife would probably throw you out of the house.
It's a part-time gig,
yeah.
And you know, so it's a you know, it's usually a good 10 to 15 hours a week that I'm there. But
I know part-time. I mean, like when you were a supervisor, part-time doesn't mean anything.
Well, right, exactly.
You put the hours in anyway.
Yes,
so.
It's a little more standard hours than supervisor was. Supervisor was really 24/7.
Right.
Just whenever I could do it, but historian. And I do a little more set hours, like 5 to 8 p.m. I'll be
That's
in the
neat.
Office. But I can let you in. You know, there's no issue with that. Just come on in, and we'll if you have anything you want to look at, happy to be there for you.
Yeah.
So.
That's interesting. And it's neat people can donate.
You
know, because, like I said, why keep it if it's something pertaining to history of Saratoga?
And the key is that we do have the vault, right?
Right.
You know, it is crowded with some documents, but if it's something that is really that relevant to the city's history, if you get it to me, then it's going to be preserved in a dark, humidity-controlled
environment,
you know, concrete vault that is it's preserved for posterity, right?
That only you have the combination.
Right, I only have the combination to it at the end of the day,
and that's hermetically sealed.
If it's a little. I don't want to say less important, but if it's a little less, we have file cabinets that are stored in that office too.
Sure.
A file cabinet, and it goes into a categorical folder of other documents. And then other researchers can use your document to build their research projects, right?
That's excellent.
So
I know this is your forte. I mean, you even when you were a supervisor, we talked about the history of Saratoga.
Yes.
And this is right up your alley, and they couldn't have had a better guy to do it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So, but you're going to have to come on the show now periodically.
After I do my thing on Skidmore, because we are up here on the Skidmore campus, I mean, I think I should come in and maybe talk a little bit about that history. Once I finish the research. You know, I have to actually come back here to the archive that's here to learn more about the Skidmore history, because I am fascinated by it. It's so cool.
Oh, yeah. Well, my wife's aunt went to Skidmore.
Yeah.
And, I mean, she would have been pretty near 100 today, but... it's an amazing history.
Yeah, and it's one of our top institutions here in this community.
Definitely,
you know,
definitely.
For sure.
Yeah. All right.